Welcome to Defenders, the teaching class of Dr. William Lane Craig. Today, the Doctrine of Creation, Part 4. For more resources from Dr. Craig, go to reasonablefaith.org.
We've been talking about the doctrine of creation, and in particular, we've looked at the biblical material supporting the doctrine of creation out of nothing. And so now we come to page 2 on your outline, where we're going to look at a systematic summary of this biblical material. And if you need an outline, just raise your hand and Marion will get one to you. We encourage you to keep these outlines and bring them back week to week and eventually build a notebook of notes that you can then use for future reference. So how should we understand the doctrine of creation out of nothing? Well, traditionally, Christians have believed that God is the creator of the world in two senses. First, he initially brought the world into being, and then subsequently he sustains or conserves the world in being moment by moment. And these are usually thought to be two species or types of creatio ex nihilo, which is creation out of nothing. The first is called creatio originans, or originating creation. This is bringing the universe or the world into being initially, the original creation. But then following creatio originans is creatio continuans, or continuing creation, God's ongoing creative activity. And creatio continuans was typically divided into two further sub categories, conservatio, which is God's conservation of the world in being, his sustaining the world in existence moment by moment. Were he to withdraw his sustaining power, the universe would vanish. It would be annihilated in an instant. And then the second aspect of creatio continuans was called concursus. And this is the notion that God concurs with the operation of causes in the world to produce their effects. For example, the fire wouldn't actually burn unless God concurred in burning the leaves or the paper along with the power that the fire has. God concurs with the secondary causes in the world so as to bring about their effects, and without that they wouldn't have any effects. Now, we'll set aside concursus for the time being, and we want to ask about these two aspects of creation, creatio originans and creatio continuans. While this is a handy rubric, easily memorized, I think if you begin to press it for precision, it quickly becomes problematic. For think about creation. It seems to me that inherent to the idea of creation is that if God creates something at a certain time, then that is the first moment at which it exists. It didn't exist before that because God hadn't created it yet. So if God creates something at a certain time, that is the first time at which that thing exists. But what that would mean then is that if conservation of the world in being is a type of creation, then everything is recreated anew at every moment of its existence. It would mean that at every moment there is a new thing that is created, and therefore nothing really endures through time. Rather, you just have replicas of the previous thing produced at every subsequent moment. So it would imply you're not really the same person who walked into this room this morning. You're just another one who looks and acts and thinks a lot like that person that came in the room. Indeed, you're not even the same person who just heard that sentence a moment ago, because at every moment, God would be creating something anew. And this leads to a doctrine called occasionalism, which has been held by certain philosophers down through history, that nothing endures through time, and that therefore really there is no causality in the world. Everything is determined by God, just recreating everything anew at every subsequent moment, which is a very bizarre doctrine, I think you'd agree. So how should we elude this problem? Well, we could say, all right, creation doesn't involve something's existing for the first time at the moment it's created. Something can be created by God, even if that's not the first moment at which it exists. But it seems to me that then you've really lost an essential element of the doctrine of creation. Biblically, at least, the doctrine of creation certainly does involve this temporal aspect that when God creates something, that is the first moment at which it exists. That's when it comes into being. And so if you remove that, you've really lost something in creation. So it seems to me that what we have to do is just break this rubric apart and say, in fact, that conservation is not really a type of creation, that it's a misnomer to speak of creatio continuans, that although that's a nice rubric, it doesn't really work. And that conservation and creation, therefore, are two distinct acts, two distinct concepts. Conservation is not a type of creation, is what I'm trying to say. So how can we understand these two notions? After all, from God's point, it doesn't seem there's any difference between creation and conservation. God produces the effect in being. His action, his power, seems to be exactly the same in creation as in conservation. So what's the difference between conservation and creation if the difference doesn't lie in God and his action? Well, I think that the difference between conservation and creation lies not in God or his action. Rather, it lies in the object of his action. The difference lies in the object of his action. Namely, creation involves bringing something into being so that when God creates some entity, call it E, when God creates some entity E, God brings that entity into being at the time at which he creates it. And we can analyze this notion in the following way, if you look at the board. E, some entity E, comes into being at a time T, if and only if, and then we have three conditions. One, E exists at T. Obviously, E has to exist at T if it comes into being at T. Two, T is the first time at which E exists. That's, I said, inherent in the notion of creation, that when God creates an entity at a certain time, that's the first time at which that entity exists. And three, E's existing at T is a tensed fact. E's existing at T is a tensed fact. Now, I'll say something more about that in a minute. But if this is an analysis of what it means to come into being, if these are the three conditions that are met for something's coming into being, then we can say that God creates an entity E at T if and only if God brings it about that E comes into being at T. So creation is essentially the act of bringing it about that some entity comes into being. So God creates an entity E at T if and only if he brings it about that E comes into being at T. And if you want to know, well, what does it mean to come into being at T? Well, that's what it means, these three conditions. So, God's creating some entity involves that entity's coming into being. And notice that, therefore, this is an absolute beginning of existence for E. It's an absolute beginning of its existence. It is not a transition of E from non-existence to existence. Creation is therefore not a type of change. We should not think of E as some entity which first has the property of non-existence And then it trades in that property for the property of existence and so comes into being. Creation is not a change because there is no enduring subject that goes from non-being to being. That is a complete misconception. Rather, creation is an absolute beginning of existence for the entity that is created at that moment. Yes, question. Well, actually, I think this applies to any kind of creation. Even if God is creating something out of prior stuff. But I am thinking primarily in terms of creation out of nothing. So, yes, I am thinking of primarily creation out of nothing, but I actually think it would apply even if he creates this thing out of prior stuff. Because even if the stuff out of which a thing is made pre-exists, the thing itself doesn't pre-exist. Good question. Any other question on this concept? Yes, Dennis.
I was just wondering which of the church fathers came up with these ideas, and was Calvin one who believed that creation is continual? Because it seems like that would fit into his other ideas.
I can't say on Calvin. Certainly this rubric that I shared was one that was popular among the post-Reformation Protestant theologians. That's true. The doctrine of creation and coming into being that I'm explaining here would be Thomas Aquinas's idea, except for the idea of a beginning being the first time at which a thing exists. For Aquinas, creatio ex nihilo does involve God's bringing something into being, but he doesn't think that it has a first moment of it of its existence. And there I would side with a later medieval theologian named John Duns Scotus, who I think rightly criticized Thomas on this in this respect. I think Scotus is right in thinking that the idea of creation biblically inherently has this temporal notion inherent to it, that if God creates something at T, that's the first time at which T exists. Yes, back here.
Yeah, I guess what I was wondering, what's the definition of an entity? In other words, if you look at man, God created man.
Well, by an entity here.
The discussion this morning about right to life, are those creations? Are those entities?
Yes, by entity here, I'm using it in a very general sense, like the English word thing, anything that comes into existence, or if God creates a thing.
So births of individuals are creation originalis. Not continua, right?
What is now?
The birth of an individual human.
Yeah, that's right. Especially if you think of the soul as something that's created specially by God. But this analysis of something coming into being, as I say, really applies whether the thing has a material cause or not. Because even if, say, the chair is made out of prior material, the chair itself doesn't exist until that material is assembled by a creator in a certain way. And when it does, then the chair as such comes into being. And it didn't exist prior to that, even if the stuff out of which it's made existed before it. Similarly with the human person at conception, the sperm and the egg pre-existed, but that isn't you. That may be the stuff out of which your body came to exist, but it's not you. All right, now, for this reason, I think we can distinguish conservation from creation, because conservation does presuppose a subject which is made to persist from one state to the next. In creation, God doesn't act on a subject that is already there, so to speak. Rather, he creates the subject. But in conservation, God acts on a subject to preserve it to a later time. And so the difference between conservation and creation lies not in God's action, it lies in the subject or the object of that action. In creation, there is no presupposed object upon which God acts. That's why creation, as I said, isn't a change. But preservation or conservation does presuppose the existence of an object which God preserves to the next moment. And so on this basis, we can provide this analysis of what it is to conserve something. God conserves E if and only if God acts upon E to bring about E's existing from some time T until some later time T star through every subinterval of T to T star. So God conserves E if and only if God acts upon E to bring about E's existing from some time T to some later time T star by keeping it in being through every subinterval from T to T star. So, in both cases, the divine action may be the same. Namely, he bestows being. He bestows existence. But I think you can see that they're quite different. In the case of creation, God's bestowal of being can be instantaneous. And, moreover, it doesn't presuppose a prior object is there. But in conservation, it is an action that takes place over time from one time to another, and it presupposes that there is some object already there, which God will then conserve to a later time. Any question about that difference between conservation and creation? Yes, down here, Steve?
So conservation is something that exists, whereas creation is something new. Well, you could actually see it as, what about the new creation we are in Christ? We are conservation of ourself, but we are a new creation with him as Lord. And so it's both together. And it's not too different from the egg and the sperm, but one's God.
Well,
one's
I think you're quite right in saying that you're the same person when you turn from being a non-Christian to being a Christian. So in that sense, you're not a new creation. You're the same person. There is personal identity from being unsaved to being regenerate. What begins there, I think, would be a new relationship that Paul could speak of as a new creation. And you're changed. You undergo a radical change at that point, but you're still the same person.
Right, you're right, because it's not replacement theodology.
Right, God, you're not replaced with another person.
Right, we still get to live with him. It's right. Us. You know, in fact, all we are is we're crowned with his will because we made him Lord and allowed him to do his, we accept his will as our own.
Yes, and we are changed. I mean, we undergo a change when we're regenerated by the Holy Spirit, but there is not a new person. Now, let me just highlight one aspect of this doctrine that I think deserves comment, and that is that this notion of creation is committed to the idea of a tensed theory of time, or as we've called it in this class, an A theory of time, or a dynamic theory of time, because if you adopt a tenseless theory of time, according to which all events, past, present, and future, are equally real, then nothing really comes into being, right? They just exist at their appointed stations, and nothing ever really comes into existence. To say the universe has a beginning on a tenseless theory of time is just to say that there's a front edge to the four-dimensional space-time block called the universe. The universe would begin to exist in no more sense than this piano begins to exist at this edge. It has a front edge to it. But if we say the universe really came into being, then I think we are affirming the objectivity, the reality of temporal becoming, and therefore a tensed theory of time. So this, I think, this clause 3 represents a really essential aspect of the doctrine of creation that is often overlooked. I think a serious, robust, biblical doctrine of creation commits you to a tensed theory of time. On a tenseless theory, I do not think you really have a robust doctrine of creation, because nothing really comes into being on that view. In fact, the universe just coexists eternally with God in a relationship of dependency on him. He holds it in being, but he never really brings it into being. So a robust doctrine of creation, I'm suggesting, involves commitment to a tense theory of time. Any final question on that point? Yes, back here.
Can you apply the notion of transition to something that does not exist? You were saying earlier that when something comes into existence, it comes into existence at that particular time. Is that correct?
Yes.
But you said that it could not come, it could not transition from something that
right.
did not exist to.
Right.
But the notion of transition, wouldn't that infer that it has some properties that allowed it to transition from none?
Well, transition would, but I would reject the language of transition, mm-hmm. and I would reject the language of change. Okay. Creation is not a kind of transition or change from non-being to being. And that's why perhaps this expression, comes into being, might be misleading to you. That might sound like a transition, right? Like coming into the room. You came in from outside. But when I'm using the expression comes into being, these three clauses define what that means. It just means he exists at T. T is the first time he exists, and he's existing at T as a tense fact. And that has no language of transition in it. So don't be misled by the phrase comes into being to think that that's like coming into the room. It's not a change or transition. It is an absolute beginning to be of the effect that God creates. All right, next time we'll look further at the doctrine of conservation and see to what extent the doctrine of conservation commits us to a tense theory of time as well.
The copyright for the content of this recording is held by Dr. William Lane Craig. For more, go to reasonablefaith.org.